So much then for dana paramita, the perfection of giving, the embodiment of the altruistic, the other-regarding aspect of the bodhisattva's life and work. We've lingered over it rather a long time because it is very important. And now we come to sila, the second paramita, which embodies the more individualistic, more self-regarding aspect of the bodhisattva's life. This, we may say, corresponds to the aspect of self-purification. Not exclusively so, but perhaps predominantly so. And with this paramita, sila paramita, we shall deal rather more briefly than with the dana paramita. Now, we've dealt with the dana paramita more or less along traditional lines, making use of the traditional classification, the traditional subdivisions. But in the case of sila, I propose to adopt a different procedure. Traditionally, sila is expounded in terms of the five precepts, not to take life, not to take what is not given, and so on. The 10 precepts, which result in a threefold purification, a purification of body through 3 precepts, speech through 4 precepts, mind through 3 precepts, and so on. And also, in terms of the special 64 precepts for bodhisattvas. Now, all this is familiar ground. All these sets, all these lists of precepts, we've gone over it several times before, and today I'm going to take it all for granted. Today we shall be concentrating on Buddhist ethics as applied to 3 different aspects, 3 different spheres of human life. That is to say, first of all, food. We really are coming down to earth, aren't we? Work and marriage. Now, these 3 affect practically everybody. Now, first, a word on sila in general. A little while ago, I rendered sila as uprightness. This is more or less the literal meaning, just uprightness. I know it's generally rendered, in fact, I've rendered it myself in some contexts, as morality. But I've deliberately this evening refrained from or avoided doing this. I've avoided this term morality, because I find, especially when I'm in conversation with my younger friends, that for many people it has rather unpleasant connotations. The word morality is associated with the traditional, the conventional, not to say the reactionary moral attitudes which many people believe are now outdated and outworn. In other words, those which are based on orthodox Christian doctrines, not to say dogmas. And while we are on the subject, I can't help observing, as a result of my own study, not only of religion in the West, but the general history of the West, the orthodox Christian moral ideas and ideals, which are not necessarily those of the Gospels themselves, have probably done much more harm than good in the West. Amongst other things, they have been responsible for generating in millions of people feelings, in some cases very, very strong feelings indeed, of sinfulness and of guilt. Feelings which have, I'm sure, ruined the lives of countless thousands, even countless millions of human beings in the West. And I think it's only fair to observe that especially in the sphere of sexual ethics, the influence of Orthodox Church Christianity has been quite disastrous. Now, I mention this, in fact, I emphasize this, because all of us, having been born in the West, having been brought up in the West, having been educated in the West, are to some extent influenced by these attitudes and by these assumptions. It's not a question of accepting or not accepting Christianity. Even in the case of those who do not accept Christianity, who consciously reject it, atheists, humanists, agnostics, and so on, they are very, very often deeply influenced by Christian ethical assumptions and so on. And it's important that we should try to understand this. Because if we don't understand it, if we don't see it, if we're not aware of these processes at work in our own minds, we shall unconsciously carry a Christian attitude, especially in ethical matters, over into our Buddhist life with resultant confusion, possibly chaos, especially where the sphere of ethics is concerned. Not so very long ago at a meeting, not a meeting in London, but a meeting outside, I did happen to remark that in my opinion, Buddhism could become widespread in England only if there was, first of all, a revival of paganism. Huh? Now, everybody at the meeting thought, oh, this was a great joke, and they just thought I was pulling their leg. But there was one man, who thought I might possibly be serious. Huh? So after the meeting, he came to me and he said, "But what did you mean by that remark?" So I said, "Well, what do you mean by paganism?" So I said, I mean by paganism an abandonment of Christian, that is to say orthodox, church Christian, ethical attitudes. Only if one gets rid of these can the way be paved for the introduction, for the practice of Buddhism on a wider scale. Now let us come on to the application of Buddhist ethics to the three aspects of life already mentioned. Now here the treatment, as we've just a few minutes left, can be only suggestive and not exhaustive.